Aren't you glad you're a Christian? If you look up the word providence in the dictionary, you'll find something like the foreseeing care and guidance of God, manifestation of divine care or direction. This life can be pretty scary at times. And we don't always see the hand of God in the midst of our difficult circumstances. I mean, and sometimes it seems that, man, things just couldn't get any worse. There's no way out. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. But I believe if we would just trust God, just hang in there and trust God and obey Him and allow Him to use us as His servants, well, I believe that it will all work out in the end. And He just might accomplish some great things for His kingdom through us. Well, if you would, let's be turning back to the book of Esther. We're going to continue. We're going to finish. Today we're going to finish our study through this good book. All right, as I said last week, in the beginning of springtime each year, the Jews celebrate the feast of Purim, and it means the casting of lots. And it commemorates the time when Esther, the lot was cast against the Jews, and Esther stood up and saved her people. Well, they still observe it today, and from what I understand, during the celebration, the story of Esther is read at two different times. Well, the events in this book, they take place during the Medo-Persian Empire, sometimes called the Achaemenid Empire. And our story is based in Susa, the capital, which was the winter residence of the Persian kings, about 150 miles north of the Persian Gulf, present-day Iran. And as we saw from last week, the king at this time was Ahasuerus. The NIV uses his Greek name Xerxes. Now Ahasuerus, he was a few kings down from Cyrus. Cyrus was the one who allowed the Jews to go back home, to return to their homeland after their exile. Well, last week in chapter 1, we read how the king threw a party. And the queen, Queen Vashti, refused to come and to display herself before the drunken men of Susa. And so, well, she was removed from being queen because she didn't obey the king. In chapter 2, after returning home from his failed attempt at conquering Greece, well, they decided to have something of a national beauty contest to fill the king's harem and to try to find someone to take Vashti's place as queen. Well, among the many women was this beautiful young Jewish woman named Esther, who was taken. And we learn that she had been raised by her older cousin Mordecai after her parents had died. Well, amazingly, the king loved Esther. And so this Jewish orphan girl became the queen of an empire that was comprised of more than half of the known world at that time. Well, Mordecai, he seems to have been something of a guard at the king's gate. And you remember that we read that he uncovered this plot to assassinate the king. And Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name, and sure enough, he was found to be true. Then in chapter 3, we were introduced to the bad guy, Haman. And in the Purim celebrations today, whenever his name is read, well, they make a bunch of noise with these things called graggers, which they spin around. Now Haman, he had come into a position where he was second in command to the king. And the king had ordered that everyone was to bow down to Haman. Now, Haman was extremely egotistical. And so, you know, he loved it to be sure. But Mordecai refused to bow down to him. Well, some of the king's servants asked Mordecai why he wouldn't bow down. And sure enough, like good little gossips, they went to Haman and they said that, well, Mordecai wouldn't bow down to him. And it was because he was a Jew. Mordecai was so angry that he decided that not only did he want to kill, or Haman was so angry that he decided that not only did he want to kill Mordecai, but he also wanted to kill all of the Jews. And so one man in a multitude wouldn't bow down to him, and so he decided on the genocide of an entire race of people. Well, possibly being superstitious, Haman then, he had them cast lots before him to find out what was the best day to kill the Jews. And that's where the name Purim comes in. It was kind of like throwing dice. Well, the lot fell to about a year from that time. And Haman, he went to the king, and without even asking who the people were, without even asking what they had done, the king went ahead and gave him his signet ring so that Haman could go and make it law. And we learned that the laws of Persia and Media, once they were made, they could not be broken. Chapter 4, we had this really interesting dialogue between Mordecai and Esther through one of the king's eunuchs. And Mordecai gave her a copy of that edict and told her everything that had happened, and that she was the one who must go to the king to plead with him for their people. Now, it's not a small matter to go ahead and speak against the king's right-hand man, but that wasn't the problem. You see, the problem was, the real difficulty was that it was illegal to go before the king if you had not been summoned. See, it could result in your death if he didn't extend the golden scepter. And on top of that, she was a little bit wondering, a little worried about their relationship. He hadn't summoned her in 30 days. And another thing you need to keep in mind is they weren't newlyweds at this point. At this point in the story, you see, she had become queen about 5 years ago. And also, something else, well, this difficulty, obviously she was reluctant at first. Mordecai then, he told her that, well, you see, she might have attained royalty for such a time as this. And so she said, go, assemble all the Jews who are found in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maidens also will fast in the same way, and thus I will go into the king, which is not according to the law, and if I perish, I perish. See, many people would have concluded, man, let someone else save the Jews. I don't want to risk my life. But not Esther. You see, she decided that she was going to do what was right no matter what. If a guard was commanded to drive a sword through her body, she would die doing what she knew was right. And so that brings us to today, to chapter 5, Esther's banquet. Let's start our reading in verse 1. Now it came about on the third day that Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace in front of the king's rooms. And the king was sitting on his royal throne in the throne room opposite the entrance to the palace. So she's standing there not knowing what's going to happen to her. Let me just throw this in here. Isn't it great to be a Christian? You see, we don't have this kind of fear when we go before our God and King. Well, the king looked up and he saw one fine-looking woman. And he said, come on in here, Queenie Pooh. Well, something like that. And then he went ahead and he extended the golden scepter out to her. All right, verse 3. And the king said to her, what is troubling you, Queen Esther? And what is your request? Even to half of the kingdom it shall be given to you. Esther said, if it pleases the king, may the king and Haman come this day to the banquet that I have prepared for him. And the king said, bring Haman quickly that we may do as Esther desires. So the king and Haman came to the banquet which Esther had prepared. As they drank their wine at the banquet, the king said to Esther, what is your petition? For it shall be granted to you. And what is your request? Even to half of the kingdom it shall be done. So Esther replied, my petition and my request is, if I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and do what I request, may the king and Haman come to the banquet which I will prepare for them, and tomorrow I will do as the king says. Now, the king knew perfectly well that she hadn't said what she wanted to say. Now, have you ever gone somewhere with the intention of bringing up something very important, maybe, you know, putting forward a very important question or comment, and when you got to that point, well, you choked on it, and so you decided, well, I'll have to try again another time. Now, whether she temporarily lost her courage and you know, maybe she kind of chickened out, or if that was her plan from the beginning, well, the delay worked out perfectly. And it also makes for some suspenseful reading, which I like. Well, after the feast, Haman, he's going home. He's in high spirits. I mean, he just got to go to a banquet with the king and queen. He is the only one who was invited. But sure enough, there's Mordecai sitting there at the gate. And he's not showing him any respect. And in verse 9, it says that he was filled with anger against Mordecai. Let's read verses 10 through 13. Haman controlled himself, however, went to his house and sent for his friends and his wife Zeresh. Then Haman recounted to them the glory of his riches and the number of his sons and every instance where the king had magnified him and how he had promoted him above the princes and servants of the king. Haman also said, "Even Esther the queen, let no one but me come with the king to the banquet which she had prepared. And tomorrow also I am invited by her with the king. Yet all of this does not satisfy me. Every time I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate." What a poor, miserable wretch. I mean, he had all those blessings, but he couldn't see past Mordecai. I mean, he had everything in the world that he wanted, but all those blessings were obscured by one petty annoyance. Don't let that happen to you. Verse 14. Then Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends said to him, "Have a gallows 50 cubits high made in the morning, ask the king to have Mordecai hanged on it, then go joyfully with the king to the banquet." And the advice pleased Haman, so he had the gallows made. Now that's like 75 feet high, okay, a six-story building. Some scholars think that it was just hyperbole, exaggeration for emphasis. But others think that that was actually the height of the city walls. And so that means that the gallows were erected on top of the city walls. So he wanted everyone to be able to see it. Now I think it's kind of like that old saying, hang him as high as heaven type of thing. So he had his carpenters get to work putting up the gallows. And you see, he couldn't wait a year for Haman to die with the rest of the Jews. Now you talk about an egomaniac. But as Proverbs 16:18 says, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. All right, chapter 6. Ahasuerus' insomnia. I'm sorry, the PowerPoint is all out of whack today. So anyway, it just bugs me. OCD. Verse 1. During that night, the king could not sleep, so he gave an order to bring the book of records, the chronicles, and they were read before the king. See, I guess his life was so boring, it helped to put him to sleep. Verse 2. It was found written what Mordecai had reported concerning Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs who were doorkeepers, that they had sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. The king said, "What honor or dignity has been bestowed on Mordecai for this?" Then the king's servants who attended him said, "Nothing has been done for him." Now, of course, we read about that incident back in chapter 2. So he recognized that Mordecai had actually saved his life. Now, as about just about everything else in this book, that sure was some good timing on that insomnia, as well as the passage that was read to him, that section that was read. Mere coincidence? I don't know. It's hard to think so. Verse 4. So the king said, "Who's in the court?" Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace in order to speak to the king about hanging Mordecai on the gallows which he had prepared for him. The king's servant said to him, "Behold, Haman is standing in the court." And the king said, "Let him come in." So Haman came in, and the king said to him, "What is to be done for the man whom the king desires to honor?" And Haman said to himself, "Well, whom would the king desire to honor more than me?" I mean, old Big Head thought the king was talking about him. So what did he say? Well, I like the VeggieTales version of this. "This sounds like the kind of guy who deserves a parade. I think this guy should be dressed in royal robes and march through the whole city on your horse. And maybe you should even let him wear one of your crowns. And one of your most noble princes should lead this man through the streets proclaiming, 'This is a really neat guy. The king really likes him. He's brave and has rugged good looks.'" It's pretty close, actually. So what happened? Well, verse 10. And the king said to Haman, "Take quickly the robes and the horse, as you have said, and do so for Mordecai the Jew, who is sitting at the king's gate. Do not fall short in anything of all that you have said." Can you just imagine his face wish I could have seen it. Well, as you know, I just went downhill from there. I mean, there are consequences for evil actions. Now, definitely a judgment day, but many times during this life as well. You see, evil that you deal out, it's kind of like a boomerang. Come back to hit you. Not always, but often. And of course, the Proverbs talk a lot about that. Haman, he should have taken the time to read them. And so should we. Well, anyway, after he had done all that was commanded him by the king, well, Haman's wife reckoned, man, this is the beginning of the end. And she made a very interesting statement here in verse 13. If Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish origin, you will not overcome him, but will surely fall before him. I don't know. Maybe she had heard some of the stories like of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Maybe she had recently come across some of these stories, or like of Daniel in Babylon, whose enemies, well, they were thrown into the lion's den, you see, after he himself had survived it. However, she came to this conclusion. Haman's wife was right. Verse 14, it says, while they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hastily brought Haman to the banquet which Esther had prepared. It's chapter 7, we got Haman's end. Verse 1, now the king and Haman came to drink wine with Esther the queen, and the king said to Esther on the second day also, as they drank their wine at the banquet, what is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Even to half of the kingdom it shall be done. Then Queen Esther replied, if I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me as my petition, and my people as my request. For we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Now if we had only been sold as slaves, men and women, I would remain silent, for the trouble would not be commensurate with the annoyance to the king. And King Ahasuerus asked Queen Esther, who is he? And where is he who would presume to do this? Esther said, a foe and an enemy is this, wicked Haman. Then Haman became terrified before the king and queen. The king arose in his anger from drinking wine and went into the palace garden. But Haman stayed to beg for his life from Queen Esther, for he saw that harm had been determined against him by the king. Now when the king returned from the palace garden into the place where they were drinking wine, Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was. Now check this out. The man who was so upset because the Jew Mordecai would not bow down to him was now himself bowing down to the Jew Esther. Well, the king, he put the worst possible construction on it, and it says, he said, will he even assault the queen with me in the house? Well, then one of the eunuchs in verse 9 said, behold, indeed, the gallows standing at Haman's house, 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on behalf of the king. And the king said, hang him on it. And so sure enough, Haman was hanged on the very gallows that he had made for Mordecai. God's will and promises cannot be thwarted by evil men. You see, an unalterable Persian law, that's nothing for God. You see, a seemingly dead end is not always so with God on your side. And that brings us to chapters 8 and 9, the Jews' victory. So here we find the happy ending. Verse 1, on that day King Ahasuerus gave the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews, to Queen Esther. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had disclosed what he was to her. The king took off his signet ring, which he had taken away from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. So Esther was given the estate of Haman, which she then gave to Mordecai to take care of. And then Mordecai was given Haman's position. Well, the king, he couldn't revoke the law. You see, he couldn't revoke the death order for the Jews. But he did what he could. And so he wrote a counter law. So that a counter decree to help them protect themselves. Verse 15. Then Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal robes of blue and white, with a large crown of gold and a garment of fine linen and purple. And the city of Susa shouted and rejoiced. For the Jews, there was light and gladness and joy and honor. In each and every province and in each and every city where the king's commandment and his decree arrived, there was gladness and joy for the Jews, a feast and a holiday. And many among the peoples of the land became Jews, for the dread of the Jews had fallen on them. And so the Jewish nation, it was stronger, it was more unified than ever, even making these converts, these proselytes to Judaism. Well, chapter 9, a bunch of the people, we can see, came to the aid of the Jews. And they ended up killing 75,000 of their enemies throughout the empire, and even Haman's 10 sons, they were hanged as well. You see, a lot of people died because of Haman's hubris. As your word of the day, hubris just means excessive pride or arrogance. Well, chapter 9, it finishes then with the institution of the Feast of Purim for the Jews. All right, chapter 10, Mordecai's greatness. Well, verse 1, it mentions how Ahasuerus laid a tribute on the land. Now, I suspect that was to pay for the Grecian war defeat that happened in between chapters 1 and 2. Verse 2, and all the accomplishments of his authority and strength and the full account of the greatness of Mordecai to which the king advanced him, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia? For Mordecai the Jew was second only to King Ahasuerus and great among the Jews and in favor with his many kinsmen, one who sought the good of his people and one who spoke for the welfare of his whole nation. Well, Ahasuerus, Xerxes, he reigned for 20 years before he was assassinated. And from what I've read, the Medo-Persian Empire just went downhill from there. 331 BC, the empire came to an end with Alexander the Great's victory at Gaugamela in Mesopotamia. And that was the end of them. Well, Mordecai's name, sure enough, it has been found on some ancient clay tablets excavated from over there. Now, obviously, it's up to debate, but many people believe that they are indeed referring to the biblical Mordecai. And that is what you want from a leader, is it not? One who sought the good of his people and one who spoke for the welfare of his whole nation. You see, is the leader in it for himself or for his people? So what's the conclusion of all this? Don't be a Haman. No, that's not the conclusion. Now, that is good advice, though. See, so many wonderful things happen because of Esther's courage and because of God being on her side. If I perish, I perish. Now, as I asked last week, could you have done that? Will you do that? Now, it may not be if I perish, I perish, but it may be if I'm fired, I'm fired. Or if I'm unfriended, I'm unfriended. You see, will you and I say and do what is right no matter what? Or what's it going to be for you and me? Peace and popularity or preaching? It's tiptoe and tolerance or truth? So will we worry about our own skin and what everyone else thinks about us over what God thinks? See, as Joshua put it, you're going to have to choose whom you're going to serve. With God on our side, yeah, there may be some rough times, but the end of the story will always be the same. Romans 8:28, and we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. There were a tremendous amount of coincidences in the book of Esther. Any spiritual needs this morning, if we can help you in any way to get your life right with God, maybe you'd like the prayers of the congregation, or maybe you need to be baptized into Christ, if you'd like to sit down and talk with one of the elders, well, just make your way to the front now as we stand and sing.